Okay, well, Kufar Akbar, everybody, hello. This is another edition of Radio Free Kafiristan, a radio program dedicated to rightly dividing the truth between Christianity and Islam here on Radio Free Kafiristan. We examine the evidence for both of these faiths to arrive at the truth. It leads us to the sun. Thus go I. Shalom, peace and blessing. This is, of course, your humble host, Eric Thekifer, coming to you live from the cavernous depths of this here Kafir Cave in Dar al-Harb, Kafiristan. We are here every Tuesday afternoon at 5 p.m. Central Standard Time, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And now, since we got some people joining us from California, we have to say it is 3 p.m. Pacific Time, if I'm not mistaken. But anytime's a good time to be here on Radio Free Kafiristan. I am live casting here on StreamYard, and we are streaming out to Facebook. We are streaming out to YouTube, and also we are live here on the Global Patriot Radio Network on Blog Talk Radio. If you want to call into the show, the call-in number is area code 319-527-6706, area code 319-527-6706. I see that we have a lot of people in the chat over here on YouTube. I see Critical Thinking is there again. Debit Ray. Who else? Paul Sutliff from the Sutliffian Report is there. And Animal is there. Nim Grace is back. Way to go. And XYZ. And I hope I got everybody there. I'm not sure if I missed anybody. I hope I didn't miss anybody. I hate doing that, because when you do the roll call and you miss somebody, they're just like, how did he leave me out? Well, I didn't. If I did, I didn't purposely do it. But thank you all for coming and participating in the chat and contributing to the show. Okay.
As long as you mention me, we're okay. As long as you mention me.
And who's this?
The most important person.
Okay. Rad. The radical, the doctor, radical moderate, who got his degree from, where did you get your degree from again?
Where Psychotic State University. Signed by Dr. L.S. Dementis himself.
That esteemed scholar himself, who's Marvel Comics, or I'm not exactly sure where. But anyway, okay, so this week we are going to be talking about the Sharia Islamia, Islamic law, the Sharia. My understanding is that it's you call it, if you say Sharia law, it's like saying law. That's something that Usama pointed out. So anybody that says Sharia law, they really don't know what they're talking about. So I kind of just say Sharia or Islamic law, or if you say Sharia Islamia, is that correct? Is that a correct way to say it?
Yes.
Okay.
Islamic Sharia.
Islamic Sharia. Okay. So this Islamic Sharia, this is the law given to us by God, which would be, according to Muhammad, Allah. And they derive it from the Quran. They derive it from the Ahadith. They derive it from the Sirah, the Tasfir, and the Takrith. Am I leaving something out? Something else that they might derive it from? Canon law, maybe rulings by some sheikh, mullah, wizard of smart someplace. Who knows? But it is the law that they must follow. Now, when I look at the Sharia, the one thing that I always like to point out is how antithetical, how opposite it is, or how it runs into conflict with the United States Constitution. And when we look at how, where this law comes from, it essentially is derived originally from the Pack of Umar. A lot of its precepts are the things that are in it that we find. And if you look at the Pack of Umar is a treaty that was signed by the second caliph, Umar, and the people of Jerusalem. And it was one of these things where it wasn't really a treaty. It was kind of a coerced submission to the rule of Umar. And we all know what Umar did. He went on conquering throughout North Africa into Egypt and so on and so forth. But when we look at what this law says, there are several precepts found in this in this. And if you go to the Reliance of the Traveler, hold on, where is it? Right here, Reliance of the Traveler. This is the Jurisprudence Manual for the Sharia, and this is endorsed by the Al-Azhar University, which is in Cairo, Zimbabwe. Or no, not Cairo, Zimbabwe. Cairo, Egypt. And it's one of the most esteemed universities of jurisprudence for Islam. If I'm wrong on any of this stuff, John, Adam, Stephen,
yeah,
let me have it.
Vatican, you know.
Yeah, yes, that's a great way to put it. Yeah, it's the Vatican for Islam, or the Sunni. The Sunni, not okay, because the Vatican would be for Catholics, Sunni would be for Muslims. Okay, so this thing says several. This pack says several things, and the first one says, we shall not build in our cities or in our neighborhood new monasteries, churches, convents, or monk cells, nor shall we repair by day or by night such of them as fall in ruins or situated in the quarters of the Muslims. You can't even put them in the quarters of the Muslims. So you, as a Christian, you're no longer allowed to build in their cities churches. You can't build monasteries. And at this time, there, you know, monkery was being practiced. They wouldn't allow that. And here's the key part. It says, nor shall you repair by day or night. So you can't even fix them. If let's say today, and I'm sure that John had brought this up, I think in Egypt, where you couldn't even fix a broken pipe or something in a church, and you just had to let it go to.
You can't make renovation in the bathroom except by permission from the president of Egypt.
The president of Egypt.
Yeah, should go all the way from like the city to the minister, for example, then prime minister, then go to the president of Egypt to make like small signature to approve for any renovation in a bathroom.
And how often are these requests?
Five years to take permission. If you'd like to build a new church, it's a big issue.
Okay, so if I got a backed up toilet, I got to wait 5 years to unclog that thing.
Yeah. It's a horrible thing. And most of the churches try to do that quickly, or to do it without the permission, because if they wait, it will take a long time, 5 years. They do it quickly in the night without permission, 2-3 days to make the renovation, and that's it. Because if they waited, it will not finish.
Now, Adam, I'm sorry, not Adam, John, can you verify this? I've heard reports and stories where the church, okay, these are like ancient buildings, a lot of these, okay, well, most of them. Okay, I mean, these are like, you know, millennial old kind of buildings, so they definitely are in need of repair in a lot of cases, just normal maintenance. But for instance, the roof, okay, on a church building, if they repair or just do patchwork, you know what I mean? Just cut out just a small section to repair a leak, okay?
In the night,
right.
So the government couldn't notice.
But my thing is, there are cases where they've made the repairs, okay, at night, and then the Muslim crowd or Muslim mob finds out, and they go down and they burn down the church.
Yes, and they attack the church, they burn it, they broke the door. A lot of violence, you can see.
Okay, does this happen in Pakistan too, Adam?
Not exactly. It's a little bit safer in that aspect. The older churches are proclaimed to be historical buildings.
Yeah.
So because they are historical buildings, so they are protected under the historical whatever, like the history and et cetera, mm-hmm. because they were built during the time of British
occupation. Right. Okay.
Occupation.
Yeah. Okay. So what about building new churches, though? Is
new
that
churches you have to go through? Yeah, you have to go through a huge length for the approvals and all these kind of stuff. And like I showed it to you last time as well, the churches which are not in the main cities like Lahore, Karachi, Islamabad, they could be under attack any time. So mm-hmm. they have taller brick walls, like 9 feet, 10 feet tall brick walls, and on top of them they will have barbed wires or or glass, broken glasses taken to in such a way that people would not be able to easily get inside, and they have doors which are like good high enough that they are reaching the roof so that nobody can jump over the door and all. So it becomes like a castle kind of a thing when the attack happens in that street, and so they would all inside there lock the door and maybe safe for a little bit time.
Okay, so it's basically a fortress.
Kind of a thing. Like they built it like a fortress, not a church that you guys see over here with wooden doors and everything. Like, and this is what I'm talking about, the suburbs and the villages kind of an area. In the main cities, you know, you have to go through, in the villages you also have to go through a lot of permissions, but in the main cities, because it's like a lot of people getting used to of the internet technology and the world, and so in the main city they kind of accepted it, but then there's a limit how many churches you can have in the number of square miles and all that, so you don't get easy permissions to do such a thing.
Okay.
It's a hassle to go through.
Sure. Okay. And okay, I just wanted to make sure that we understood. It's just in case anybody wants to say, well, you know, you can go ahead and say that, Kaffir, about this. But when you have people that are actually from these countries and have witnessed it firsthand, experienced it firsthand, you know, you can go ahead and pack your lunch and take off, you know, and hit the road, because we're not hearing it. Go ahead, Rad.
A couple questions. One for Adam. What about house churches? Now, I know, because I know some missionaries that are in Saudi Arabia, because like I said, I worked in the oil and gas industry for a little while. And they say, you know, well, in the American section, or the, what do you call it, the it's a whole city, a whole town, okay, where they have these, where they're supposed to be allowed, okay, freedom of religion in their own houses, okay? But when they start inviting Saudi nationals or even Muslims from other countries, okay, into these house churches, they get raided. And now nothing happens to the American. They just get sent home, okay? But the Muslim from the Philippines or Sri Lanka or whatever, or even the Saudi Arabian Muslims, they'll be killed. You know what I mean? I mean, severe, harsh punishments for them. Is that kind of the same thing in Pakistan?
So house churches are altogether a different ball game in Pakistan. So now, Pakistan have different areas, specifically areas defined that they are Christian areas, dump areas, bad areas,
right,
where you have only Christian population. Sewerage system is pretty bad. You have the worst of the worst conditions, and these are areas where Muslims or Muslimin do not live in. So they are building a church is, there is no rule there. The rule is of no law over there. There's no, like, police hardly goes in because they are the chure. They are the SHITTERS. Okay.
That's how they call them. Untouchable. Yeah. Well, basically untouchable.
So there they do not even have enough money to build churches anyways. So what happens is some people will allocate his room as church kind of a building kind of a thing. And that happens inside that facility, inside that living quarter area kind of a thing. I don't know how to say that.
Mm-hmm.
But like outside it doesn't happen like that. You can't just allocate a house room and call it a church. It's not possible.
Let's say I was a contractor and I went over to Pakistan and I worked in some industry. I don't know what would be there. But let's say I did, okay? And I invited some of my Muslim coworkers over to, you know, have a church service or whatever. Would it be kind of the same thing? I mean, in other words, me as a foreigner could get raided, or, you know, the house could get raided. I could be expelled, okay?
Not exactly.
No, so that wouldn't happen.
Not exactly. No, basically, if you are invited, so yes, I know it happened in some of the Eastern countries. Yes, but not in Pakistan. In Pakistan, if you are a foreigner and you invited some people for a church service, so that will be a church service. If you invite a Muslim, not even telling him that it's a church service, he will be very, very pissed at you, right? He might not be your friends anymore. He might punch you or abuse you and then lost from there. But like nothing really legally will happen to you because you are inviting people inside your home to pray. And that's it. You cannot call it a church. So that's not a church. You invited some people to come for praying. So that's not considered a church in Pakistan, at least.
Okay. What about in Palestine, in Muslim-controlled Palestine, I should say?
Well, during the times of, like I lived in the Gaza Strip, there's three churches there. There's the Orthodox, the Catholic, and the Baptist Church. And, I know when, for instance, when there was, remember there's the cartoons, the Danish cartoons?
Mm-hmm. Right.
When that happened, I used to work at the Bible Society there, and they came and they threw a little explosive at the Bible Society when that happened. And then there was a time when the Pope before this guy that said something about Islam or something, and then they came in a major explosion, but nobody was there when it happened.
Really?
Eventually, they killed the general manager of that Bible Society, and they end up closing the Bible Society after that. But,
now, let me ask you this, this Bible Society, is this the World Home Bible League, official title? No? Okay.
I remember this. This was where, didn't they do something to his family also, or no?
He was a friend of mine. His name is Rami Ayed, and his wife was pregnant.
Because I knew there was something going on with the family where it was just absolutely tragic that he was killed.
Yeah, it was a brutal murder, as if they were torturing him to force him to accept Islam, and he wouldn't. Mm-hmm. And they murdered him. It was brutal. His name is Rami Ayed. It was in the New York Times. And, his family... His family fled to anyway. Yeah, it's a terrible.
Wow.
Okay, so can we move on or no? Rad, go ahead. If you got something else you want to add to this, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say. So what three people just testified to, okay, was basically the fruits of the Pact of Omar. Okay, the fruits of Islam.
Oh, we have so much more to cover here. I mean, we got like miles to go tonight.
Well, I'm just saying, in this instance, you have one, the legal thing, which John Isaac testified to regarding what's happened in Egypt. And then Adam testified the total segregation and separation legally of Christians and putting them basically into an untouchable status.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have, Gaza Strip, that's kind of a lawless kind of area anyway, but it just shows, the mob mentality of what's happening, of this ideology is just kind of what I want to point out. But.
Okay. Somebody talking, it sounds like Frank Kahn. Frank Kahn, are you there? We can hear you. You sound very faint. It sounds like you're in a closet or something. Well, not maybe a closet. Hold on just a second. Let me try to...
Underwater.
Hold on. All right, now try it. Hello, test 1, 2. 1, 2? Yeah, we can hear you now. Hold on. I'm turning up your volume.
It's not on your side. It is. We all cannot hear her properly.
I can't hear her at all.
Yeah.
Oh, you can.
It's not on your side. It's on Frank's side.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I'm thinking it is on my side. All
right. Well, go to your microphone settings and try to crank them up. I can hear you, but I have you cranked all the way up. But if they can't, no. Sorry, because normally when you're on here, you're I'm not saying that you're loudmouth or anything, but you come very across. No, don't say that wrong. I'm just saying you come through very clear. No, don't do that to me. You come through very clearly. You're Lima Charlie. You're Lima. Let's just put it there. Yeah. Okay. You guys would do that.
Adam. Hey, Connie.
Be good, boy.
I'm just putting Eric in a bad situation.
That's all right. And
that's what I do.
This is. You can get in line with my wife. She does it all the time. Okay, so let's get back to this church building thing, because when we look at the Reliance of the Traveler, where it says in here, it says according to this, on what page are we on? Page 608, 011.5, such non-Muslim subjects are obliged, meaning they're obligated, must comply with Islamic rules that pertain to the safety and indemnity of life, reputation, and property. In addition, they Number five says, may not build higher or as high as the Muslim buildings, though if they require a tall house, it is not raised. Number seven says, and are forbidden to build new churches. So if you look at the Pack of Omar, where it says that you're not going to build in your cities new churches, new monasteries, or repair them, it says it right here, and it's codified right here, saying that they're following this law, this Sharia. Number two, we shall keep our gates wide open for passerby and travelers. We shall give board and lodging to all Muslims who pass our way for 3 days. This I really don't understand, unless it's referring to the tradition or the culture of that time to give lodging to people who are traveling. But this appears to me it's making it obligatory to do this. Do you guys have any commentary on that? Know anything about it? Let me show you up here on my screen so you guys can see. Pasted the Pack of Umar to a document, to a Word document here, and these are some of the things that it goes by number. We shall not give shelter in our church or dwellings to any spy. Now, who is a spy? Who's the spy? Anybody? Anybody? Anybody that's against Islam, okay, I get that. Nor bide him from the Muslims. So you cannot give quarter to somebody in your church if the Muslims want this guy for whatever, maybe proselytizing, or they would do number four, we shall not teach the Quran to our children. Now, if this makes sense to me, perfectly good sense to me, because if I'm a Muslim, the last person in the world that you would want to teach the Quran to your children would be me, last one, because I would be going through there, and I'd be pulling out Usama Duck Duck's, where is it at, generous Quran here, and I have all kinds of little nifty little tabs here. Where were we at? I got it all tabbed out. I said, okay, well, let's go to this verse right here, and let's look at this, and let's look at that. So I get that. That makes perfectly good sense. You don't want the kafir teaching the Quran to, whoops, wrong up there. You don't want this kafir teaching the Quran to Muslims. Okay, we shall not manifest our religion publicly, nor convert anyone to it. We shall not prevent any of our kin from entering Islam if they wish to. So you cannot, if
now, that is,
go ahead.
Now that is a big problem, and that is why we still have in Pakistan forced abduction of little children, converting them into Islam, marrying them at a very young age with elder guys. And this happens to approximately 1,000 child girls every year, out of which approximately 400 are Christians. And I'm talking about every year. So
in Egypt, it happens too.
In Egypt, you said, Steve?
Yeah, it happens a lot in Egypt too. Yeah, John probably knows.
Well, it happens in Upper Egypt, but not only Egypt. Upper Egypt, I mean, about 3 kilometers, around 300 kilometers or more from Cairo, the capital of Egypt. It happens regularly, but not with this number, 1,000, maybe 300, 400, 500 maximum for every year. Many children or young women are kidnapped and forced to change their religion and married to Muslims.
Well, this sounds like a worldwide problem then, because if this is happening in Pakistan, if this is happening in Egypt, do y'all remember that Michelle Obama hashtag bring back our girls?
That was so effective, man.
Oh yeah, that really got them all back right at once. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So you have the same thing here of a bunch of Christian girls in a Christian school. Was this Boko Haram that had taken them? Is that who it was in Nigeria?
Right.
Yeah, and this is the same exact thing. So I see kind of a pattern here. I wonder where they get this idea. Maybe us here in the West have the wrong impression of Islam, and to talk about this would be, of course, Islamophobic.
Under the pressure of human rights organization in Pakistan, some of the senators actually tried to pass the law that no child cannot be converted out of his religion or her religion. So the person has to be at least 13 to revert to Islam. That law was so fully opposed, and there were riots on the streets. You can just Google this thing in the internet in Pakistan, and you will see all that information. And then they were never got implemented. Hence, you can even convert in 3 years, 2 years, 1 year, 5 year, does not matter. And you can say 6 years old girl, she willingly accepted Islam. 9 years old girl, she willingly accepted Islam. I married her because Muhammad married a 9 years old girl, and I'm legally having sex with her. That's legal, allowed by law. You can't do jack with that guy.
Yeah, and Chris had posted in chat that it's just disgusting. I mean, these practices are just disgusting, and it offends. It really is offensive to our sensibilities here in the West. I'm not sure. I mean, how do Muslims, when they hear of these things in Pakistan or in Egypt or in Palestine, when they hear of these things, what is their reaction on this? To us, it's repugnant. It's disgusting.
I'll tell you, most of Muslims in Egypt, for example, accept them because they say no. They don't. We don't force anyone to enter Islam. They left their families and they like to be Muslims, and they are married to Muslim men, and they will care about them. But we know well that these children or young women were good Christians. Oh, they are all the time in church. They are all the time in the prayers, and they are giving a good testimony for their lives. Suddenly, they disappear and become Muslims. Then it's not logical. But Muslims, most Muslims, I don't say generally all of them, no, it's majority. They like to be in peace of mind and see that no, they like to be Muslims. They like to marry Muslim men. They like to leave their families. All this stuff. Majority like that.
So it's not. I would assume that it's not universally accepted, but it is. You're saying it's probably is accepted by the majority of the Muslims in Egypt itself.
So yeah, majority are accepting this.
Okay.
Or they don't want to fight with other Muslims. Tell them no, don't do that. They leave it like that.
Yeah, they don't want to make waves. Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, here's another part of this that I wanted to show out, and this is exactly AC/DC gets to be on my show every week.
Yeah.
You can't ring church bells. Well, what do we do here in Kafiristan? We ring church bells nice and loud. Take that. Okay, number six. In some places, it's a city ordinance where you cannot do it. That you're exactly right. That tells you where this country is slipping off to. It's slipping off into the secularist abyss of.
Does my sound any better or no?
No.
No, thank you.
I can hear you fine, but that's me. But if you can't hear, if they can't hear you, then the audience can't hear you. Go ahead, Adam. What?
I feel like now it's a little better. It's not like the old days, but it's better. So it's hearable, manageable, hearable.
Okay. Here is a doozy. We shall show respect towards Muslims. Think about that. We shall show respect towards Muslims. And we will act just like Rosa Parks had to and rise from our seats when they wish to sit. And you want to try to tell me that they were saying during the Obama administration that Islam is perfectly, or Sharia is perfectly compatible with the United States Constitution. Oh, really? Really? Or here's one. You must keep to the side of the street, meaning that you must get out of the way and let the Muslims walk on the sidewalk. And traditionally, this is what historically I understand happened here. The Christians would have to walk in the part of the street where the horses crapped or where the animals crapped. And you would have to walk in that filth while the Muslims got to walk in the part of the street that, that didn't have that. And they were forced. Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah, to make them walk in the narrow part of the street.
Okay, well, it's in Reliance of the Traveler. It's in their Sharia also. Now, here's one that I don't see why they would. I don't know who would want to resemble, but here we go. I mean, I wouldn't want to wear. I don't know, but I've looked at what these people wear when they go on Hajj. I don't want to wear that. I mean, what's the? But anyway. We shall not seek to resemble the Muslims by imitating any of their garments. The, what is that? Gualanzua, the turban, footwear, or the parting of the hair. We shall not speak as they do, nor shall we adopt their kunyas. Do you guys want to expound on that at all?
So I can tell you a real life story.
Okay.
This happened back in 2000 and... 13 or 14, if I'm not mistaken. You can search it on the Google. The person's name is Nasser Masih, and he is an actor. He's an actor who acts, obviously, right? So he did an advertisement for television. He wore an ihram because the advertisement for a SIM card means, you know, SIM card is a generic term, right? The phone SIM card. About during the time of Hajj, that there were some discounts, and he wore an ihram. The Pakistani Muslim society went bazanga on. Huge company. It's a Jewish company who actually tried to demolish Islam by giving an ihram to a Christian on the live television, satellite television. They made hell for the Christian. They made hell for the Telenor company. They made hell for everyone. This guy was not living in his house. God knows where he went. His house was attacked. His streets were attacked. And he lived in a very normal Christian community, way far out of the city. So, like I said, like there are Christian areas. So he lived in those kind of areas. And this is what happened because he wore ihram, the dress for Hajj, you know, the white two dresses, white two sheets, on a TV for advertisement as an actor. So there you go, your answer, buddy.
That's just sick. And why would this be codified into the pact? Why? What would be the purpose of doing this? What are they so? What was Omar so afraid of? Was he trying to make sure that there was a clear delineation of who was and who was not Muslim, and then that is to continue, or what? That's the only thing that I could figure is where he would want to make people who were non-Muslims easier to be identified, and that they.
They used to actually have that, where they did have, like in Egypt, there was a dress code where the Christians had to dress a certain way, and then, you know, and they had a particular uniform. I remember Father Zechariah talking about this on TV.
Yeah, uniform, and they should put like a ring, like bell or something, make sounds. Then anyone in the street can point a finger. This is a Christian. They know from the sound. This is a Christian, and they should, if they like using like a donkey or horse to go, they should go by the opposite, not like in face forward, no, face in the back. Then this is their Christian. This is the problem, and it was like continuous like that till 19th century, exactly at 1810. All these behaviors,
all
this stuff, but it was horrible for all Christians.
Wow! Here's a good one. This is I like this one. they are not greeted with assalamu alaikum. Assalamu alaikum. You can't greet me with the peace. Why? Because I am a kafir. I am, what does 98.6 say that I am? Oh, that's right. I'm the worst of creatures. Okay, here's a good one for...
Wait, let me comment on that. That is something. Muslims, actually, every Muslim I've encountered, I mean, it's something so simple, so subtle, okay, that you won't even notice it. But I guarantee you, you will never, ever have a Muslim greet you with that, unless they're a recent revert, and they're just saying, assalamu alaikum to everybody, you know what I mean? Okay? But seriously, do you guys know of any Muslim that has greeted you with assalamu alaikum? They always say assalamu alaikum to my brothers and sisters, to my Muslim brothers and sisters, and to the Christians' friends, greetings. If you notice that, that is so indoctrinated in, it's baked into the cake, okay? Think about how absurd this is. You cannot greet me with peace first? That is total and complete, what's the word for it? Passive aggressiveness, I guess, if you would say. In other words, I do not wish you any peace because I am at war with you unless you greet me with peace, and then I know you've surrendered to me. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
On a psychological basis, you know what I mean? And it's something that, I think that is the most telling, okay, aspect about Islam and its relationship to other religions. You cannot greet them with peace unless they submit to you and greet you with peace first. What is our Christian understanding? We greet everyone with peace, right?
Christ, sure. The peace that surpasses all understanding, absolutely.
Exactly. Okay.
Yeah. When you read Paul, if you read Paul's epistles, there you go. There's your example right there. Oh, wait a second. Paul invented Christianity. That was okay. That's a completely different subject. Okay. I like number eight here. Number eight's a doozy.
If you go to number eight, if you don't mind, I want to add this. In Pakistan, when they talk to Christians, they just say salam, which simply means peace, not salamu alaikum. Peace be upon you. So because salam and salamu alaikum is a standard hello in Pakistan, as in hello language or hi language,
mm-hmm.
which is indoctrinated into the language as hi, hello is salamu alaikum. So they, when they meet Christians, they just say peace, full stop. They do not say peace be upon you, assalamu alaikum. They don't say. But then when they're meeting each other as Muslims, they would say full assalamu alaikum, and they would even add assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu, which is additional of and the mercy and the rahmah of Allah be upon you as well. But like, that's what I'm saying. So this is how they like peace, full stop. Don't fight, peace. Or I don't know whether they are calling themselves to be peace in front of them, or I don't know. But like peace, that's it.
To me, that is religious bigotry. A perfect example of it. If you go to Israel, you know, Jews, they say shalom. Now, I don't know if there's anything else that is supposed to come out of that. If, you know, you go to a Hasidic Jew or some type of tradition that comes out of there. But my understanding is shalom is the standard greeting. Well, here, you don't get it. Okay, let's go to one of my favorite little tidbits from the Pack of Umar, and that would be, we shall not mount on saddles, nor shall we gird swords, nor bear any kind of arms, nor carry them on our persons. Now, I'm not going to pull out the hardware here and show you that I would be in abject rebellion against this, and I would probably be a criminal in a Sharia-compliant country, but this right here again runs into the antithesis of the Constitution. This is a direct violation of the Constitution, Second Amendment stuff. If you cannot bear arms to protect yourself and protect your family, then you're completely dependent upon who? Well, the government or the Muslims. Under this case, it'd be under the Muslims. So I don't think the NRA would do very well in Pakistan. Or in Egypt. Do they have...
I don't know about Egypt.
Do they have private gun ownership in Pakistan and in Egypt?
That's what I was about to tell you, that your passport, your ID card says Christian, then go try buying a legal gun in Pakistan.
And you can't. Is that what you're saying? Is that your point?
Dude, you can, but not as a normal Christian. You might need some MNA, MPA, who would give reference to for you and say, yes, I know this guy, he is okay. So you need certain high-level references to get the license to buy a gun as a Christian. You as a normal Christian, you just simply cannot. And John can tell you about Egypt.
Yeah, same in Egypt. You have the ID, it's written the religion. And when you go to any government place, first thing is you look at the religion, not the name. You look at the religion and they decide, but they don't announce it publicly, but it's, they decide if they will help you to make it easy to finish your work, your papers, or make it harder. And I know many people were like stuck many times in the government or government issues, papers, for this reason, for the religion. And we still have it till now. We still have it in Egypt till now.
Okay, but there's no prohibitions for Muslims that are similar to the Christians. Okay.
By law, we are equal. Christians and Muslims are equal. But actually, no, not true.
Wow.
Muslims are more equal.
Yeah.
There you go.
All the chances to do everything quickly, faster. The religion is written in the ID card, in the passport. The religion is written. And the people in Egypt, first thing they think about it, the religion. What is the religion? Yeah, this guy, when there is no parade or mustache or something, yeah, maybe Christian. Look, the religion, Christian. No, we will not do it for you today. Come next week. And so on.
Well, I just want to comment on some of those things. First of all, I'm actually shocked that in Egypt and Pakistan, they actually have gun owners' rights where you can buy personal firearms. I'm like, no, seriously, I am actually shocked at that because I would think that they would like want to restrict that, okay? But just being on a total an authoritarian government, I would think honestly. But no, that's interesting. We can discuss that another time. But just the very fact that based on your religion in modern times determines whether you can own a firearm or not to protect yourself and your family. Think about this. The United States of America, right now, they actually want to pass this horrendous gun control bill, okay, that would make pretty much anything other than a flintlock rifle illegal. Seriously.
Right.
Okay. You know what I mean? And here you have in Pakistan and Egypt where, no, you can actually own firearms as long as you're not a Christian. You know what I mean? So it's like, no, totally disarming a populace of Democrats or the lefties, the liberals, whatever you want to call them. They want to disarm the populace and give all the guns to them. You know what I mean? I mean, seriously, this is a total recipe for destruction,
yeah,
of a group of people, whether it's a minority or the majority. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I'm there's been a couple gun stores in the United States that have been in the news where they have denied Muslims from coming in, Muslims, people who profess to be Muslims, from coming in and using their range, and they use the excuse to say, look, we are responding, and this is how they word it. I've watched what they've said, and I don't agree with it. They use the excuse that, well, these people, Muslims, have used their religion, and if they're professing to be Muslim and practicing Muslim, I guess they were careful about how the way they worded it, but they said, if you are practicing Muslim, we're not going to let you use our range. And they've gotten away with it because they said, well, this is our justification. We are responsible for the safety of the people that are on our range. And we have had too many instances where we've seen Muslims commit terrorist attacks with firearms in our country. And I don't think that any type of discrimination, regardless of who you're discriminating against, is right. I understand the concerns that they might have, but I think that's just going too far. But then if you make an equitable application in someplace like Pakistan or Egypt or someplace like that, people look like you got a horn growing out of your forehead. And, well, why is that a problem? So, you know,
Let me just interject a minute, Steve. I really disagree with you on this position. I don't think it goes far enough because I would not sell cutlery to a Muslim. I mean, seriously, if I worked that fast beyond and a Muslim dude came in and he wanted to get a bunch of butcher knives, I'd be like, no, I ain't buying this to you. Here's some plasticware. Or I would not even rent an automobile to a Muslim because, you know what? Dudes be having to run over people. Okay? Or definitely.
Right. Well, you know, the thing that I don't have a problem with at a gun range is because everybody at a gun range is armed, and that guy's not going to do anything with the firearm because people are going to start, you know, if it's like a movie theater or something, people can't shoot back. But here at a gun range, people are going to shoot back because they're equipped to do it right away. So I don't have a problem with it at a gun range.
The one dude killed three people at the gun range. I think it was in your state, Tennessee, was it just recently? Was it Tennessee or was it Texas? I forget. I don't know, but he killed three people. And then the people in the gun range followed him out to the parking lot and shot him dead. But he still killed three people. I'm just saying. No, Muslim, you come to me with the beard and jihad, all hopped up in jihad. Want me to sell you a knife or rent you a car? It ain't happening.
Okay. Well, you and your employer would be getting sued in some way, shape, or form. Okay. All right. So those of you who are looking for a job application from the Radical Moderate, don't accept it.
Can I add something,
go ahead, John.
By law, anyone in Egypt can make a company. No problem. Christian, Muslim, no problem. But if, like, let's say, Christian Media is a company, and the company is successful, I give a real-life example, the most richest man in Egypt is Christian, and it's known long time ago. His name is Tawis, is known. And he made, a cell phone network in Egypt. First cell phone network in Egypt was made by his guy, and was very successful. All people go to him. And because hate and discrimination between Muslims and Christians, it's not by the government. It's inside the hearts of people or Muslims in Egypt. They began boycott his company. He stopped dealing with his company and asking the government and senators, asking the government to make another company for mobile or cell phone network. And they forced this guy to sell his company to Vodafone. And Vodafone, instead of it was like the company by this Christian Sawiris, it's now Vodafone, and he left because of this discrimination and the hate from Christian Muslims that we find the most richest person in Egypt was Christian. The law says it's equal, but practically, no. Practically, there is big discrimination between Muslims and Christians, and Muslims don't like that Christians be better than them. Even they are more smart, even they are they have a lot of tools. They don't accept that.
Okay, so in other words, what you're saying is that even though the law says one thing and how it is applied is completely different.
Yeah. The law is, and even you can see that in debate, he says, oh, everyone can have his own business in Egypt. Every year there is equality between, it's on paper. But practically, they cut relationship with this company, go was the other company. And before I Egypt in 2009, there is a company like a fast food made announcement in the newspaper, general, the newspaper. It's, this company is a Muslim, moderated by a Muslim owner. He wrote, we don't want to hire Christians. We want to hire Muslims only. In the newspaper, generally. And government can do anything because it's private business. The owner want to hire only Muslims, not Christians. This is what happened.
Well, they've
can they do that legally? I'm sorry, Eric, but
can
you, seriously, can they
say that? It is private business. What is the, what's the problem? Yeah, it's racist, but how
well,
can...
It's not racist. It's religious bigotry.
Yeah, yeah, but it's in Egypt, everything like that. If you go to buy something from the food from the supermarket, and you know that you are Christian, they deal with you worse than the other Muslim.
Well, they used to do that. We used to do that all the time in our country. I mean, we've been doing it since, you know, we did it to the Irish when the Irish were coming over here starving from the Irish potato famine. We would say, okay, well, we have this job opening, but you Irish, you don't apply for this job. Or they would say that, you know, in the Jim Crow or the, you know, separate but equal in the Jim Crow South, blacks need not apply, and they would get away from it. But if you try doing that today, you could literally lose your business. You will be sued Egypt,
right?
What you're saying, in Egypt, this is not a big deal.
Yeah.
See that?
He announced in the public newspapers. It is not like by words or like oral law. It's a public newspaper. Everyone can read this paper, this newspaper. And it's well known. It was like well known for all people that he doesn't want to hire any Christian. He will hire only Muslims.
So it actually says that. No, seriously. Like Eric just mentioned, we can go through history and we can show you signs, okay, where they actually put up help wanted signs and said Irish need not apply. Well, I agree with that because those Irish are, you know, are a bunch of, you know. Yeah, because I'm Irish, so yeah, I agree with that. I'm just, but no, I mean, Irish need not apply, okay? I mean, do they actually have that in Egypt where it says Christians need not apply?
Yeah, yeah. There are some companies like that. There are some companies you are not allowed to work in it. And higher positions, prime minister can be Christian. And the presidents, no way. Presidents, prime minister, and like the government, we have like one or from out of 2025 would be Christians, and the whole rest are Muslims. Prime Minister, no way to be Christian. No way.
Let me double that over there in Pakistan as well, for what John Isaac is saying. Same situation. All the all the higher positions in the government, no Christian. Bye-bye. Tata. And obviously, Prime Minister, full stop, never. The Vice Prime Minister, never. In the whole Senate of 140-something odd seats, I know of two Christians, that's it. They are called minority party leaders. And that's it. The rest are all Muslims. So they can never pass a bill because just two people, what can they do? And same is the case last year in 2020. In one of the largest cell phone market in Lahore, in Gulberg, two businessmen, one Christian, one Muslim. One Christian businessman was winning the deals. You know what the other Muslim did? He went to his shop with few of his guys. He gave him his card, visiting card. And his name is Muhammad something, as always, like 80, 70, whatever percent of people has Muhammad in their card, in their names. He is his rival, right? He took the card, put it on the desk. When he left, he threw it in the dustbin. Like, obviously, why would he deal with the rival? Like, he was a rival. His people who were there as a buyer or something, they were waiting for this. They started a riot that this Christian did blasphemy by throwing the name of Muhammad in the garbage. They started the riot. They punched him, kicked him, burned his shop and everything. It's all on the news. You can even Google that. Killed the guy. Full stop. Killed by mob. His family was crying on the street that they became zero from being a millionaire. They became zero on the ground. Their shop is gone. They are now in debt because the things that he got on debt, because that's how business works, it's gone. They are in negative. This is how it works in Pakistan as well. That's standard.
And it's accepted by the people, by the public.
Hey, he did blasphemy, man.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And you, hey, I got a neat little story. My granddaughter was doing a paper for somebody that was on the Titanic, and they have to show how they struggled to survive or something like that. And the guy that she was doing it on didn't struggle enough, evidently. He was able to get on a life raft, and he got on right away, and it was really no problem, and he survives. So she was kind of disappointed that she couldn't do this. So my wife and I are talking about, well, can you find somebody that's, you know, struggled and has gone through some intense persecution and has persevered and has showed great character traits, and you need three articles. And I'm like, oh, Asha Bibi, no problem. So I printed them up right before the show. I came to my granddaughter, so she's out there right now doing a paper on Asha Bibi. Yeah.
Asha Bibi.
Asha. Miss Bibi. Okay, we're about ready to wrap this up. I got two more to go here. Let's see. We shall not sell fermented drinks. So you can't have wine or port. And I get, you know, some people don't want to drink at all. And that's fine. That's you don't have to. But we tried that here in the United States. As a matter of fact, we passed a constitutional amendment prohibiting the manufacture, sale, and distribution of alcoholic beverages. And that worked all about that much. It didn't work at all. So we had to do what? Pass another constitutional amendment, fixing the constitutional amendment that we passed because of the temperance movement. So this part of the Sharia is not going, this is right on the reliance of the traveler. Division O, 11.5, and then Bowleg 6, are forbidden to openly display wine or pork. Well, if you can't sell wine or pork, what the heck? That's unconstitutional. So take a hike. And then last one, I don't know if you guys want to comment. Rad, do you want to comment on that one? Did you ever go to a Sharia compliant country and survive?
I can comment on that if you want. According to Pakistan.
Okay, go ahead. What do they do in Pakistan? They don't drink in Pakistan?
Oh, they do. That's the beauty of it. Let me show you. So the Pakistan largest alcohol manufacturing organization is called Murray Beverage. It's owned by Muslim. It's created by Muslim. Distributed by Muslim. But only the person whose ID card says Christian can buy it.
Well, there's no way around that.
Okay, so let me ask you a question. We have a drinking age. We have a drinking age in our country. Do Christians act like dealers for Muslims who want alcoholic beverages then? Is that how that works?
Hold on, guys.
All right. Go ahead. All right, I'll listen. All right, go ahead.
So how do you think that so much of a business can work with 2% of Christians only, right? So basically what Christians does, that's their business. They buy from the shop. And then buy from the shop for $10, sell it for $15 in black to Muslimi. That's their business.
Wow.
Dude, I'm not talking to them. I'm going to make so much money, dude. And no, I am 100% against, okay? Not drinking, no.
A lot.
Water of life. Water of life is whiskey. The same. And beer? Well, that's like nutritious, healthy food. I'm just saying.
Yeah, that's a food group. You get that's your grain food group right there.
No, it is. No, seriously. I mean, no. Granted, you get a Budweiser, you're not going to get any nutrients from. But you get some of these good IPAs, that's a meal, okay? In a can. It really
ounces of meal. I like that. Okay. All right, let's do this last one. Okay, Rad, go. Okay, I figured this would trigger you. Go ahead.
Okay, now think about this. Okay, Adam, I mean, you being from Tennessee, or is it John? I forget which one is you from Tennessee. But think about this. You all are whiskey-producing states, right? Okay? I mean, think about this. I mean, you just killed an entire industry, or you created an entire industry, okay, to sell to Muslims, because, dude, all the Muslims I know are heavy drinkers, dude. They love good stuff. I'm just saying, okay? But you know what I mean, Adam? I mean, seriously, I mean, could you imagine that, okay? All of a sudden, one of your billion-dollar industries is all of a sudden shut down. You know what I mean? Yeah, anyway, that's all.
Shut down, buddy. I'm telling you. 2%,
yeah.
Like, out of these 2%, anyone who doesn't have business or a job, he lost his job. He just have to go stand outside the main hotels, like the major 5-star hotels who has wine shops inside the hotels only. He'll go in, buy whatever he wants to buy, and then he will distribute it to the Muslimin in their homes. So he'll buy from there, deliver it to the home, get whatever markup on it, and that's his business, because until he finds a new job, full stop.
I'm an idiot. Dude, so are you. Dude, Steven, so are you. We're idiots. We need to move to Muslim countries. We can sell them bootleg booze, and we can actually have sex with their ex-wives so they can remarry them. I mean, seriously, it's a cottage industry. It's brilliant. Oh, and of course, okay, if you want milky creamer in your coffee at work and you're out of creamer, you can go up to your Muslimin breastfeeding woman.
Okay, that's all right. Okay, the last one that I want to talk about. They actually had – no, I'm not going to go there. I was going to say that Islamicize Me thing with David Wood. They did that one year, that one scene that they had about that. That was just – that was over the –
yeah, I was offended by that. That was over the top.
Yeah, that was a little too much. But, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, we shall always dress in the same way wherever we may be, and we shall buy the Zunar around our waist. And this is found in Reliance of the Traveler, or in the Pack of Umar, and also right here in Reliance of the Traveler, the Sharia Jurisprudence Manual for Islamic Law. It says, are distinguished from Muslims in dress wearing a wide cloth belt, the Zunar. Is this practiced in any Islamic country where you, and here's what I think about when I think of the Zunar having been forced to wear something to signify what religion you are. I think of the yellow star of the Holocaust.
Well, the Zunar, read it. It has to be yellow. The Zunar is yellow, right? If I'm not mistaken, it specifically gives it a color of yellow. Okay. I mean, no. You know, Adolf Hitler got this stuff from someplace. Okay. Well, not just Adolf Hitler, the Nazi Party. They got this stuff from someplace, and I'm pretty sure that it says yellow. Okay. The color is in the description.
Well, this is what reminds me of it is the Jewish star when we start, and it's something is so recent and catastrophic, you know, 70 years ago. That event happened. Okay, so let's go ahead and finish this up. Do you guys have any additional thoughts on this? Because I want to get to Steve and he wanted to make a couple comments about his debate with Nadir the other day. Does anybody have anything that they want to add to this?
Real quick, I just want to comment, Eric. Everything that you just quoted from the Pact of Umar is a forgery.
Oh, okay.
And by a forgery, I mean, there is no one anywhere that would ever sign such a document representing a peace. You know, unless they literally had a gun to their head and they were a total like, you know what, yeah, I'll sign this stupid thing because nobody's going to believe it and I want to live kind of deal. But no, it is considered by every scholar the Pact of Umar is a forgery. Now, Muslims will respond to you and say, well, see, it's a forgery. Okay, yeah, who forged it? Muslims forged it. Not only did Muslims forge it, but it's now indoctrinated in Islamic law. Ibn Kathir, the two Jahalites, okay? The two Jahals, or whatever you want to call them. Every single Islamic school of Islamic jurisprudence has indoctrinated or incorporated the Pact of Umar, or at the very least, a great majority of the Pact of Umar into their Islamic interpretation. Why? Because it is all based on Islamic law. It's all based on the Quran. Okay? You can't escape it. In other words, if you get a fully compliant Sharia state, which, according to Muslims, has never happened, but yet they want to make it happen in the Kufr lands, I don't get that concept, but either way, okay, this is what you're going to get. This is what you can expect if you are a Christian. And guess what, people? If you're a Christian, that's good. That is actually good because at least you have some rights. If you're a Hindu or even an atheist or even, you know, any other religion other than a Christian or a Jew or a Sebastian, whatever that is, okay, this is the best you can expect. If you are anything other than if you are anything other than those religions or those faith traditions, no, your only alternative is to keep your mouth shut. Whatever we give you is what you're going to get. And if you don't keep your mouth shut, or we just so happen to want to kill you, we'll kill you. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's kind of like saying, well, you know, you're privileged because, you know, we're not killing you. You look at these other people that we are killing. So I get the argument, and it is insane. And then just reading this book and this book will drive a person insane. Okay, Mr. Steve, let me get this. Can you ferment camel urine? Animal, I don't know about that. I don't think I would want to try. I don't think anybody, I don't know why you would want to try, but they might. I mean, because if it does cure all of these ailments.
You can set it. You can make it set.
Maybe we ought to find a sponsor who ferments camel urine and
no,
make it halal.
I searched, you know, there's no camel urine beer. Okay, I'm just saying.
All right.
Camel urine products. Oh, yeah. Well, next week because I'm gonna be running the show, so we got a couple commercials coming up. By the way, if you put your order in, Muslims, using the code, the product code, consider that. I'm sorry, we cannot contact our sponsor on that. So, yeah, you're pretty much screwed. I'm just saying, sorry. We have nothing to do with that.
Okay, well, don't buy that stuff. Okay, Steven, you had a pretty good debate with Nadira. Well, I wouldn't say a pretty good debate. It's kind of the same old washed, rinse and repeat type mantra that Nadir is famous for. But I had asked you to come on tonight and to us a little bit about it and tell us the things that you want us to know and want to highlight about it.
You know, there's just one thing that, dude, it's like, you know, I don't know this guy this well. I saw him on The Apostate Prophet. He did a thing with Apostate Prophet. And then he did something with Jay Smith and something with David Wood. And so that's all I've known about him. You know, I didn't know about him, too much about him. And I thought, my impression is this guy is like, he goes in and out. And I don't think he believes in anything. He just wants to go in and out and try to avoid stuff and, you know, I couldn't make sense of him when I was watching him. And when we did this debate, you know, he's the one that he approached me and he said he wanted to do this. And, you know, I had one idea. I just had one thing. And I kind of felt it was from the Lord for me to say to him. And that is that he wanted to talk about Deuteronomy 18:18. And, sorry, man. So, like, nobody ever called me. 6 months, nobody called me. But then what's interesting, the Lord, I really felt the Lord gave me this. He wants to talk about Deuteronomy 18:18. the thing that I was reading Deuteronomy 18:18, and when I read it before, you know, in preparation, there's just one thing that jumped out at me, and that is the Lord says, I will put my words in the mouth of the prophet. You know, because 18:18 is about, I will raise up a prophet for them from among you. And Muslims say that that's about Muhammad. And the thing that says, God says, I will put my words in his mouth. God says that. I will put my words in his mouth. Well, I thought about the passage in Ibn Ishaq and Al-Tabari and Waqidi and several other, like 50 other places, where it says Satan put his words in Muhammad's mouth. And so when I talked with Nadir, I told him this. I said, you know, this is what the Bible says. God says that the prophet, that God says, I'll put my words in his mouth. But how could Muhammad be the man when it says, and I put the passage up there, I put the somebody one, where it says, and the devil put these words into his mouth. And I said, here, Satan is the one putting the words in the mouth of Muhammad, whereas in, you know, Muhammad says, God says, I'll put my words in his mouth. So, and you know what? I really expected that Nadir was going to do his weasel thing, try to get out. You know what he said? He said, but Muhammad had no intention of saying those words. He didn't deny that he did them. He just said he had no intention of saying those words. And you know, you know what he said? I wrote it down. It was so amazing to me. He says, when Muhammad was informed, this is a quote, you guys. When Muhammad was informed about what he said, what? I obeyed Satan? Dude, this is a quote. Nadir said this. When Muhammad found out what he said, whoa, I obeyed Satan? Can you believe he said that?
Yeah, I can. Steve, I actually can believe it. He said that. He says all kinds of crazy stuff. But yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I guess then it's not that big of a deal.
Well, no, it is a big deal. I mean, when you have,
I'm thinking, dude, you're putting words into the mouth of Muhammad.
Yeah, and he's been on the show a couple times, and this insanity that you had to endure with him, and this is the thing. This is why I asked you first before I gave you, or I gave him your email address, because I thought, oh, well, maybe you know, on hindsight, maybe I should have just deleted his request. And I've done that before with other people. But one thing that and you're absolutely right, because when if he is saying that Muhammad had words impressed upon him by Satan, okay, what does it say here in verse 20? But the prophet right here, it's just two verses later, who speaks presumptuously in my name, a word which I have not commanded him to speak, which speaks in the name of other gods, that prophet shall die.
Well, this is
Satan is not God. But Satan is not God.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Okay. Okay. All right, Adam. Adam, the legalist. That's you're absolutely right on that.
I said God.
The God of this world. I mean, the Bible says that too. So.
Things. By the way, where is Chris? He hasn't been here all day. I'm just.
He was in chat.
I saw him in chat. But no. Okay. A couple things on this. Okay.
Yes, Miguel. Before you go in, let me call Nadir in. Hey, Nadir.
No. No,
Nadir, come here.
Is that?
Hey, Nadir, come on, Nadir, come.
That's the name of your dog, is Nadir? Hey, I want to tell you guys something funny. It wasn't funny at the time. I have a German Shepherd, and I was playing frisbee with him. And when I throw the frisbee, he can chase that frisbee for quite a while, and he'll catch it right out of the air. And I was just playing a joke with when my wife was filming, and I said, come on, Mo, catch it, Muhammad, let's go. And I put it on Facebook. You would not believe the amount of vitriol that you got a dog named Muhammad, huh? I'm like, yeah, this is a big deal. Oh, my God. It wasn't funny. It was just bad humor is what it was.
You name your dog Muhammad. I used to joke on that. I'm going to get a big dog, a big poop machine, okay, named, you know, English Bulldog, and I'm going to call it Muhammad. Oh, you did it. That's
yeah, I know. I shouldn't have done that.
Did your dog get angry on that?
But no,
so ashamed that you named him. Like, that's so mean
right,
for a right, dog.
Hold on. Let's get back to Steve in the debate with Nadir. Okay. If you read the next verse after you just read, not only it says this prophet should be killed, but more importantly, it says this prophet shall not be feared. Okay? Take a look at that. Okay? As I was spoken, when the prophet speaks in the name of the Lord, the saying does not come true. This is when the Lord has said he has spoken presumptuously. Yep, okay. Next verse. Go to the next chapter. Next verse.
No, it's right here. It's right here. You are not to be afraid of him. It's right here. It's verse 22.
He shall not be feared. Okay? Right. In other words, this dude, first of all, there's nothing that he says that is important. I do not fear him. I mean, in other words, if this dude comes and says, you know, in other words, if he falls prophesies and we say, yeah, we're going to kill you, and he says, oh, if you kill me, the Lord will strike you down. No, I don't fear you. You know what I mean? Okay? Should be killed, should not be feared, should not be listened to, however you want to interpret that. Okay? All right?
Does anybody here know what do the Muslims think about Nadir? Because I can't imagine a Muslim saying this is okay.
Dude.
What do Muslims think? Adam, have you heard
this?
What do Muslims think about him?
This.
Okay, Steve, here's the thing that we tried to tell you about Nadir. Nadir's a blast from the past. Nadir's a blast from the past from not only, okay, the last decade, oh, seriously, 2006, 2007, he ended being relevant, okay? All right? Now, I know Sam tweaked your, I get it, okay, no big deal, but I'm just saying, this dude, I mean, seriously, is just so far out there. In other words, he relies on you to scam Muslims to pay for him. Okay? In other words, Nadir says, I debated Sam Shimon. Well, they know who Sam Shimon is. And I refuted him. I totally destroyed him. Completely. But do they listen to the debate? No. Oh, okay. He debated Sam Shimon. Okay. When he went on Dr. Michael Brown's show, okay, that promoted him. Because guess what? He can say, I debated Michael Brown. I totally completely disagree.
And that's what he did after that because, again, Nadir's reaching out to me. Can you get a hold of Dr. Michael Brown and set up a new debate with him? And Brown came out and said, look, I am not going to have anything to do with this guy. This guy is a blaspheming fool, and I'm not going to have anything to do with him. And then what does Nadir do? Oh, he's running from me now. That's exactly what he said. He's running from me now.
So he's like a person we shall not mention. Consider this. But anyway, no, consider this, okay? The dude, seriously, it doesn't matter. Don't the con, dude. Okay, these are street hustlers. These are the guys you meet on the street when you go to 7-Eleven to get your tasty illegal beverage and under Islam. At the 7-Eleven, you know what I mean? There are the guys there standing out in the street corner saying, hey, can you, I got, you know, a bunch of kids, and you know, give me a dollar, you know what I mean? Okay, this is their mentality, this is who they are hustlers, and don't get me wrong, I respect the hustler, but still, they are still hustlers, you know what I mean? And besides, you should have came on my show, that I don't have a show, but if I had a show, you would have been on the show.
I will. I'll come.
When I hear Nadir talking, you know what I hear? I hear this.
Okay, I think Adam got a new toy tonight.
No.
This.
There you go. That's more like it. Now,
that's more like it.
here is the funny thing. This is no joke. You can go to David Wood's old site, Answering Muslims, if it's still up. Okay? But I lived in a town called Bloomington, Illinois, back then in the day. Okay? And Nadir lived in Peoria, Illinois. Well, I traveled the 40 miles, okay, by country-wise, okay, to go to the courthouse. And I got his divorce records.
Oh, boy.
The dude, literally, I am not making this up. This is court testimony in his divorce that he had a muta wife. Adam, mute yourself, please. No, he literally had his muta wife who actually had to testify in his divorce hearing. Yeah, he contracted me for 3 nights. But then he goes back to his original wife and says, yeah, I got a muta wife. He's bragging about it. Like, this is, like, no big deal. I mean, no, you can go to Answered Muslim. You can read the whole testimony. Okay? I showed him all the documents. Okay? Like I said, when I crawl up your ass, I get the stink on me, and I crawl up deep. I'm just saying, dude. You know?
Now, was he married? Okay, when was he already married to somebody else when he had this muta wife?
Yes, and she's like,
no kidding. And this is in a legal court document.
Legal court document? No, he does this to her. No, he traveled to New York and got the muta wife, the prostitute. But no, he comes back and he brags to his wife that he's married to. Yeah, I picked up a muta wife, you know.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay. All right. So the one that was his actual wife in Peoria is the one he divorced.
Right, yeah.
And the justification for the divorce was that he got a muta wife in New York or whatever.
Oh, no, there's more to it than that.
Okay, I don't know if I want to know more to it than that.
No, that's just the thing. Like, dude, like I said, I crawl up a Muslim's ass, I get their stink on me, but I do it for you all. I'm just saying.
Taking one for the team, Rad. We appreciate that. The picture of it's a little nasty, but we appreciate you doing it. All right, I want to get. Go ahead. Go ahead.
That's the difference between just being in the one airborne and being an Army Ranger. Like, I gotta go in. We penetrate, dude.
Okay. I want. I want Steve to further opine. We got about 3 minutes left in the show. Steve, is there anything else that you want to add to that? What was said?
You know, I didn't really want to, but there was, I'm sure you guys saw last night on Adam's channel, that guy Muhammad hooks up with the Lord.
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh.
That was amazing.
Yeah. Way to go.
That was.
So there is, and what that does is that gives us hope that the Spirit moves in even through imperfect vessels like us. And when you have somebody like, and I think this is what's so powerful about having you guys on the show, because you've been there, you've been boots on the ground, you have this experiences in your life, and you can't refute life experiences. For me, you know, I just read in a book where, you know, so-and-so has been persecuted, and this is the justification they use for the Sharia, and then they can come in and say, well, that's just something that somebody wrote. But when you have people who've been there, done that, got the T-shirt, that's completely different.
Hey, Eric, could I play a video by Linda Tortura? Is there a way to get to it?
Yeah, I can share my screen. Or you can share, just share your screen with me, and I'll put it up. Or you can send me the... Send me the link.
In the meantime, while you do that, let me tell you this.
Send me the link, Steve, and I'll put it up. Go ahead, Adam.
Okay. So this guy has been coming into my channel from the last, like, 2 months that I have noticed, at least. And it's not his first debate with me. So this one is the third vice debate. And before the vice debate, he was present in the live chats, where he was so zealous of his God, Allah, and Muhammad that he would use pretty derogatory words. So then there was the first debate in which he finally came up live, then the second, and then the third. So it's like a three-part series that I am sending out tomorrow, probably or late tonight. It would be a 3 hours video. So if you want to see his whole journey, the one at least which is related link to my channel. You guys can watch it.
Okay. Okay. Hey, can you do me a favor? You're going to put all this together into one video for YouTube. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, because what happened was that he usually comes into a discussion when the discussion is happening on a particular topic.
Okay.
So you will not be able to find it easily. So I have extracted those parts from three different segments.
Okay, can you just...
And put it into one segment.
Okay, can you send that to me in our Skype discussion? Because I monitor that every day. If you could, I'd appreciate that.
Sure, I will do that.
All right, thanks.
Well, and you guys, I'm going to be with Hatun Tash tomorrow on her channel.
All right.
So
okay.
That'll be like at 1 o'clock California time, 9 o'clock her time. So
that would be 3 o'clock our time here in Kafiristan, and out there on the East Coast, that would be 6 o'clock. No, 4 o'clock. My goodness, time differences. Okay.
Three watch clocks in front of you.
Okay, well, just Google it if you don't know what time it is, for Pete's sake. I had people like, well, what time's your show? And I'm like, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Well, I'm on the moon. What time does that make me? Well, Google it and shut up, man. Are you going to come or not, you know? Yeah, okay. So let's go ahead and watch Steven's video here of Linda Sarsour, the sewer whore. What does that mean? Like the ant or something? Okay.
Help explain that phenomenon, if you would.
So first, Sharia, I mean law. So technically, when we say Sharia law, you're saying law. But anyway. So I actually got caught in a controversy about this, which is why I'm happy to answer this question. At the same time, 8 years ago, when the Oklahoma state legislator was trying to ban Sharia, this really monstrous thing, I was in New York City, and we were basically we had a social media campaign trying to basically explain what Sharia was. And so I got into controversy at the Women's March, because then these trolls went back 8 years ago and pulled out tweets out of context and sequence, because that's what they do. And I don't care. It's fine, because I still stand by all the tweets that I put out. But anyway, what's important to understand about Sharia is that Sharia basically is the pathway for Muslims to live out their lives, right? So it's very similar to halakha, and for those who are Jews, and similar to canon law. The interesting thing is that the Islamophobia industry in this country has been really good for the past 15 years in trying to define what Sharia is. So how do people figure out what Sharia is? They go online, they Google an image, an infographic shows up, and it tells you Sharia law is stoning women, Sharia law is all these really bad, horrible things, right? It's ahistorical, it takes things and quotes from the Quran out of context. And in fact, as someone who is a doctorate of Islamic studies, we can argue the same things that people will say about Sharia. We can say about...
Uh-oh. Did Linda lose her voice, or did Stephen lose his...
Sharia is a very simple thing. It's the ways that we get married. It's the way that we divide inheritance when people in our family pass away. It's how we arbitrate all divorces, things like that. It's about praying 5 times a day. It's about fasting 30 days. It's all kinds of, almost like rules and regulations of like how to be a Muslim. Not everybody follows all of them, but the point is, that's what it is. And I want to just give a quick story that relates to Sharia. It's another word that's really scary to people. Like literally when people hear this word, like their knees shake. Sharia is one of them. The other word is jihad.
Oh my gosh, here we go.
By the way, there are Muslims named jihad.
Okay, you guys, I gotta go.
Yeah, so do I. Sorry.
After listening to such BS, we have to go.
Yeah, well, you notice that the straw man she sets up, people, they'll Google Sharia and they'll say, okay, well, Sharia is stoning women, which it is. But when you're the kafir and you can order this off of Amazon and you can actually look what the heck their law says, it's not hard to figure out, guys. And then you take what's written in here and you line it up with what we find in the headlines in news outlets all over the world. It's, again, not hard to figure out. So when we look at the Sharia
in the world right now, in the Muslim countries,
exactly,
partial Sharia, not just full Sharia. They have partial Sharia applied. What is happening there? What kind of a doubt do you have? you are being deceived in the West, and that's the reality.
And then, and a lot of ways we're allowing ourselves to be deceived too, instead of putting our foot down. Rad, we got to run. Let's go. Go ahead. Real quick.
There is lectures of her where she defends Muhammad having sex with a 9-year-old child.
And they all do that too.
I know that when she debated Mary, marrying Joe something or other. Mary Joe something or she debated her. Okay, it was a female on female debate. I told them they should have done it with Jell-O, but Mary Joe Sharp said no. That was not a good idea. But no, I literally did. But anyway, no, she debated this woman. And it turned out to be a whole thing because her Muslim husband edited the debate video. But no, she actually says that there is nothing wrong with a 54-year-old man having sex with a 9-year-old girl. She actually says that.
But when is she going to marry her own daughter with a 54-year-old guy at the age of
10? I have told Muslimas online that I will convert to Islam if they will give me their 9-year-old daughter as a wife. I was contacted by representatives of the FBI, and they said, you don't want to do that because that's child porn. And the same way, I'm like, no, I will hand you this information. But they said, no, don't do this. Because no, but, you know what I mean? No.
All right, guys, we're going to call it a day. I got a class at 7, so I got to run. And I got to eat supper yet. So, again, everybody that came tonight, thank you so much for coming. Everybody in chat that's contributed here, some of your comments are just absolutely hilarious. We got some people with the greatest senses of humor. Everybody that also contributed that was or just listening in on Blog Talk Radio, we had a couple people there, and also the people that were listening over on the Facebook pages. I saw a couple of listeners there too. Thank you for everybody listening. It means a lot. We will see you next week. Now, listen, on Sunday, the Crossing the Crescent Discussion Group is going to be hosted by Chris Claus, because I am going to be headquartered in Kafiristan West next week on Sunday and Tuesday. And Rad, from my understanding, you're taking it on Tuesday. Next, I don't know. This is some you and Chris can work out. All right, no problem. I know. I just might. All right. God bless you all. Thanks for coming, and we will see you. See you soon. Thanks for coming, Issa.
I'm trying to come. I have class.
I know. I get it. I get it. It's all good. All right, we got to run. It's what? All right. Stop. We'll see you next week. God bless.
That's for Aisha.
Kufar Akbar. All right. Thanks for coming, Annie. We appreciate you.
Who's Annie?
Annie.